hello, and welcome to the Tell Me About Your Song podcast, where I talk to musicians and songwriters about the song they've written. Today's guest is Joe Auger, and the song that he'll be talking about is called Coma 2. Thanks for doing this, Joe, and where do you think we should start?
Well, no better place than the beginning, I suppose. It's part of a project called A Fool's Paradise, and there's a particular way of spelling that title, but I'm not going to give it away. Because it's not released yet. So, so this is a part of what they call in the parlance a concept album. Woo! And I've written mostly songs about unrequited love, and I'm kind of the king of those kinds of songs. And this album was the idea was to put it to bed, put the idea of, so I would never write about it ever again. But this is, you know, one of those. So slowly with your hands, so sensuous, create deep ripples beneath the sea. Touching so tentatively, feeling all incompletely, it's so comfortable to drown. Back into those waking dreams. It's hard enough with coldest comfort warming lies. The catchiest 22s appear without warning. Do you shy or will you submit to try to pull your bones up out of someone else's earth? I'm going to cut there just for the moment, just to kind of explain where all that's coming from.
Oh, there was one thing I wanted to ask you about.
Yeah.
Although I shouldn't interrupt your thoughts.
No, go ahead.
Well, I noticed that this is sung in a very low register for the most part.
At least initially.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, truthfully, the easiest answer would be to make it sound creepier.
Right.
Which it does, mm-hmm. at least initially. But there's a little more egalitarian truth to the fact that, like, when I was first writing the music to the lyrics, I was backstage of a sort of a musical that I was involved in.
Mm-hmm.
It was during some rehearsals, and they were rehearsing stuff on the stage, but I was backstage. I kind of didn't have anything to do for a little bit while they rehearsed the scene, and so I kind of was just farting around, and I couldn't, probably my first. If I hadn't been in that situation, I probably would have done it sort of full voice, octave up or something like that. So I just, just because of the sheer end of where I was, I did it lower register like that, but then I sort of started to like it. I sort mm-hmm. of saw it. Hey, this kind of works. I kind of like the sort of accidental nature of singing it that low and kind of being a little kind of creepy and a little kind of, I wanted to make sure not to go to do more of a Tom Waitsy. I didn't want to go Tom Waitsy on it because that's mm-hmm. kind of cliched. Because I've done going on. I've written other songs that have more of a cliched Tom Waitsian thing going on. I figured one was enough. So again, that first verse there is for me again just pictorially in my head. I kind of just pictured her. Like willingly drowned, not in a suicidal way, but drowned in her own sort of experience, and her bad sort of a bad experiences, and sort of again willingly kind of taking that on instead of fighting it to a degree. And again, a lot of the water imagery was to me what always just kind of kept coming up, and
right, because drowning is. I mean, it's a scary thing, obviously, but it's also supposedly once you're in it, it is kind of like a comfortable thing that people give themselves up to.
Well, yeah, I've heard, that's the thing. I remember reading or hearing about that issue of people that have survived it, but they were clearly drowning or had drowned, once you I mean, there must be sort of, there must be some sort of a period of time for different people of like when their lungs are filled with water, they are not breathing. What do you do? I mean, you know, you can fight it for only so long until you lose consciousness and then you just give up. But I've heard that like people coming back from that somehow or surviving it, that there was this sort of calm kind of moment where it's just, okay, that's it. So, but she's, again, it's more of a, obviously, it's more a metaphor of her state of mind more than anything, obviously. The idea of waking dreams was kind of hinting at the idea of lucid dreaming, being that, like, you know, the way she went through her life was, I mean, she walked through this reality, but in her mind, this was all a dream. None of this was real, you know, and she kind of unfortunately looked at the reality of this life that way, which in turn made things pretty difficult for her, obviously, and for those around her who didn't quite know where she was coming from, you know, clearly so. And that second verse, is kind of like, again, is kind of just kind of seeding the sort of, giving you sort of the background a little bit. You know, you've traveled far, time hits hard enough, cold is comfort, warming lies. The catchiest 22s is like a very significant line for me, because this whole project and that person that I was involved with, there's a lot of weird kind of confluences of things that would happen when we were together, or when I was thinking of her, or when I was in the state of mind I was in, with, you know, thinking of her state of mind, and the number 22 would come up in the funniest places, like out of nowhere when we were together. You know, it'd be on a sign, it'd be on a license plate, it would be, there was something about the number 22 that resonated somehow with our sort of energy together, which was weird. And it's still, I think about it now and I still kind of get a little creeped out about it, because it's very strange. Like I could never, and it only happened with her. The whole relationship was probably that. It was an utter catch 22. Something like the catchiest 22s is sort of it's just me being silly more than anything, but you know, there's a point to it. To the end of that second verse, is me kind of trying to extort her into kind of thinking about the idea of pulling her bones up out of someone else's earth. Her bones, obviously, she was enmeshed in a toxic relationship with somebody that, and again, the idea that she was sort of already dead inside. So, you know, my thought, you know, pull what's left of you on this plane of existence and put it in some different earth. You know, I think part of what I was thinking was like, put it in my earth instead of his earth, you know. So I mean, the things one thinks about when you're slightly crazy, slightly drunk, and fairly smitten.
Sure.
Right. Anyway, so yeah. So then there's that third verse, and then this is where you had that question about the low voice. The third verse is where I start to think, well, I can't keep going with the low voice because that's just going to get monotonous at that point. So. Mm-hmm. Sure enough, that's where I kind of I bring it up an octave, and I start kind of getting a little more Alice in Wonderland-y a little bit, you know, with the lyrics. This thing starts getting a little surreal. The coma comes smiling, offers mint tea and cookies laced with summer cyanide and lye. The perfect concoction for the weaver of self-deception. Kiss your gamble, throw the die. Snake eyes sink their teeth so deep inside. And then, so that's the, you know, that kind of sets you up for the big, what should have been a chorus.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't work out that way, and that's kind of the reason why I kind of like the song, is that basically it's a song that has three verses, a bridge, one long rambling verse, and another bridge, and then it's over. And those lyrics, again, from that last verse, the coma comes smiling, so I personify her state of mind as, you know, well, I don't know, what does a coma look like? Mm-hmm. Exactly. But all I know is that it was offering mint tea and cookies, which is a wonderful thing. But the cookies are laced with summer, which you'd think would be nice, but then cyanide and lye. It's like, yeah. So, you know, that gives you an idea of where my head was at that point, that, you know, I don't know if the coma was that person she was with. I don't know if the coma was just her state of mind or both. It was basically whatever it is she was serving herself.
Does lye have kind of a double meaning there? Or?
It certainly does. You caught it, yeah. You know, lye being that, you know, that acidic compound mm-hmm. that could, you know, clearly do a lot of damage, but lies, you know, exactly. You know, that's another thing that I in a lot of ways, it's almost better sometimes. I mean, when I think about it, it's like, you know, when I put lyrics down onto, like, say, a graphic, you know, like on an album cover or something like that. In a lot of ways, as much as I like the words the way they are, I almost like the idea that people are going to hear that. They're
sure.
going to hear that double entendre in their head, and it'll create a little bit of dissonance in their understanding of theirs, and hopefully want to listen to it again. But yeah, so I kind of vacillate back and forth. Like when I finish this record, do I want to put the lyrics on the album cover? So I'm not really sure because you know, I have on a couple of the records, but you know, I don't know if it served it or not. So, but yeah, no, you caught that. That's good. And then, you know, Kiss Your Gamble, Throw the Die kind of hints at the title of the album, you know, Fool's Paradise. Snake Eyes, you know, it's sort of another gambling metaphor. You know, if you get, you know, two ones, it's called Snake Eyes.
And also the poison kind of imagery continuing
indeed.
Through.
Indeed. Any man, you know, people can interpret it however they like. And, you know, again, for me, when I write stuff, I like to make it so that I'd like to make it so that it's sort of has a number of different layers that people, if they hear it again, they'll go, oh, there's something else. You know, mm-hmm. there's another layer to that maybe, did he mean that or did he not? You know, what I love about songwriting, to me, the best songs have multiple layers that you can live, you know, that, you know, especially lyrically, that you can read over and over again or listen to over and over again and get something new. Their teeth so deep inside. What do you hear underwater like that? When you dive, how deep do you go? Is it any more or less exquisite than the coma that I used to know? All right, so that's the bridge of that, you know, and again, to me, that mm-hmm. bridge is, it's really just about, like, you know, she would literally revel in her state of mind, you know, in as narcissistic a way. Well, you know, as anybody that's got mental issues is clearly by probably definition, utterly narcissistic. So as narcissistic as this whole song may be, you know, as narcissistic as this whole album is probably on my own level. But anyway.
Well, let me ask. So it says, is it any more or less exquisite than the coma that I used to know? So is that sort of your own?
Well, yeah. I mean, I certainly, you know, it's referenced to my own baggage. That, you know, before I ever met her, I mean, once again, there's a whole album called The Invisible Years about my mental baggage. And it's about as creepy as this song, you know. And it's the same thing. It's the idea that, you know, the exquisite nature of being able to of literally immersing yourself in your own problems and your own kind of, you know, because no one understands, you know, head to forehead, you know, hand to forehead, you know, that kind of drama thing, you know, it's very, you know, it's when you're in it, you're in it. And it's, you either, here's the thing, you may actually be given doors opened or windows opened to get you out of that drama, but it's a scary proposition when you're in it, because it's all you know. If all you've known is mental instability for all of your life, if someone offers you stability or a handhold, you're not going to take it, because the way they look at it, it's probably, like, here's an image that I also have in my head about this particular song, of this person under the water, sitting sort of like on a rock, and you see her hair kind of in the water. But
kind of an Ophelia image.
Kind of an Ophelia, yep, exactly. But there's an image of a hand coming down, like as if to grasp her, to pull her up. But right next to it is a fish hook, a fishing hook. In her mind, it's a fishing hook.
Mm.
She's going to grab it, and it's going to yank, and it's going to tear her hand off. You know, I mean, that's her state of mind. She's afraid of any kind. I mean, and that's, I think, human nature. Anybody immersed in that kind of mental instability for that long, no matter what kind of drugs they get put on, whatever, they're going to resist it because it becomes a comfort after a while because it's all they have. So that's kind of that whole bridge. And, you know, again, I reference my own part of that. But again, for me to actually literally think that I needed to become crazy again so that I could understand her, that's how smitten I was or stupid. So I went through my own set of mental instability in dealing with this person.
Right.
Because I felt I somehow had to, and I don't know how the hell I figured that out, or I don't know, you know, what do you do when you're crazy? You just kind of think of shit, stupid shit like that.
Right.
But on the one, I'm trying really hard to convince this person while we're at the bottom of the sea. So there's a certain breathlessness to the words flowing because we're running out of time. We're running out of air. There's like, I can't keep doing this.
Right.
You know, you have to follow me, you know. But it's also, you know, part of it is like, you know, if I'm not careful, you know, and I allude to this coming up later, that I might want to just stay down here with you, which again does nobody any good, but
right.
At least we'll be a comfort to each other in our madness. You know, I mean, this is where that was going.
Mm-hmm.
But I change it up. Like I said, it doesn't follow the same form as the other verses. It becomes more of almost like a stream of consciousness, even though it's not at all. If I remember correctly, I wrote it pretty quickly. It was one of those moments, which is again why I like this lyric. Is one of those moments where I didn't do a lot of editing on that verse. Like it just came out that way, you know. And it's sort of like, and it flowed somehow, and it just sort of like, wow, okay, that's rare. You know, I mean, we all as a songwriter, you know, we kill for those moments, and
mm-hmm.
The few that I've had as a songwriter, that's this particular verse is like that. For me, so you know, so going into it is so you know, coming out of that bridge where we're underwater at this point, or me into the water of her state of mind, and then it goes. So coming out of that, you know, when you dive, how deep do you go? Is it any more or less exquisite than the coma that I used to know? If it is, then take me there with you. I need to understand if I'm to let you stay, how you approach and give yourself freely to this air. Let me see you breathing endless and shallow. Let me see you feeling shallow and lonely. Let me see your eyes forever trying to open wide, your bones always trying hard to move, always frozen, knowing something still dulls the marrow of your glow, something you're needing to remove, something you shouldn't need to live, lie in love with anymore. Okay, so there's that verse. It's desperate and unrelenting, and I'm, you know, toward the end of it. I mean, and I didn't realize later on that what it was, you know, was I you know, and in effect, you know, as I was dealing with this person, I mean, I it's one of the things you regret as a younger person, you know, not really kind of aware of oneself and what one is doing to another person. In my, you know, what's the phrase of the path. The path to hell is paved with good intentions or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in my head and in my heart, I thought, I'm going to save this woman because she's worth it and she's talented and creative and gorgeous and blah and this and, you know. I mean, really? I mean, what, you know, seriously. And that's fine. It's one thing to think, but to think you can actually do it? I mean, who was I thinking I was, you know? So that gives you a pretty good idea of where I was coming from at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Which was not in a healthy place, clearly. But I realized later on, as I, when I play it now or listen to it now, I mean, I was effectively browbeating this poor person,
right?
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It was for my own selfish reasons. It wasn't about helping her. It was about saving me from my own crap and from my own loneliness is what it ends up being, you know? So it becomes this sort of, it starts to flip, and this is where the madness starts to flip, right? So this is the part where I'm starting to lose my own sense of self, my own tie rope to the surface is starting to unravel. And this again, another reason why I love this song is, to me, this is like a perfect personification of my state of mind and how I was unraveling, like literally. But I was putting it all on her. I need to understand, if I'm going to let you stay, how do you approach and give yourself? Let me see you breathing, you know, let me see you feeling, you know, it's all about me, me, me. It's like, let me see your eyes forever trying to, you know what I mean? You look back on it, and I realize now it's like, this has nothing to do with her, you know? And that's like, again, in hindsight, after like living with the song for so long, of how kind of tragic the whole thing was, just utter tragedy. So then we go into what ends up being the second bridge toward the end of the piece, going back into that sort of, you know, but this time not quite so dire. I'm starting to get comfortable with this idea of this minor bridge, you know. So I go,
I know this place. I've been here so many times before. And I know it's hard. But follow me home, my love. Take my hand and lead the way. It's time to wake up, my love. It's time to wake up. Time to breathe in, my love. It's time to breathe in. It's time. 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 Time to wake up, my love.
So that ends up, that's the end of the song. So, you know, and again, I'm starting to feel comfortable. I know this place.
Right. It's kind of like...
I've been here so many times before. I mean, it's almost cheerful. I mean, you know, and it's ludicrousness, you know. But
you're
that's,
repeating Time to Wake Up, but it's like a lullaby. It's like...
Yeah. Well, utterly. I mean, I know that's the... No, you caught it. Again, same thing. It's just that there's the dichotomies of everything that I'm saying is not exactly what I'm saying. You know, and that's the whole point. I mean, that's madness in a nutshell. You know, up is down, left is right, et cetera, you know, so that's kind of where it was. But also, to me, a telling line is like, you know, I know it's hard, but follow me home, my love, as in, you know, okay, you know, I'm saying take my hand, but then I'm saying you lead the way.
Hmm.
You're stuck.
Right.
Take my hand, but you go. You lead the way. But it's like, so no one knows where, neither one of us know whether, you know, who steps off first,
right,
to go to the surface. So we're stuck forever, and that's it. And that, to me, was again another line that it's a subtle one, but I really like it. To me, it encapsulates the whole thing. I was never able to do any good for her. She was never able to do any good for me apart from, you know, inspiring me to write some songs, technically speaking, which is unfortunate because she was still a worthy person, still a worthy person, I assume. I haven't seen her in God knows how long. But then it's time to wake up. I mean, I'm telling that to myself as much as I'm telling it to her,
mm-hmm.
you know, and time to wake up, my love, you know, okay, that's directed at her. Time to wake up, time to breathe in, you know, breathe, you know. And it's time. So to me, the idea of that was that time will fix this. Like, it, you know, how people say time heals all wounds, or wounds all heals. And then the very last line, time to wake up, my love. Again, another double entendre.
Mm.
Wake up, my love for you.
Right.
Right. And then it just sort of ends, and that's it.
So I wanted to ask you about the recording you sent me.
Yeah.
And that I wanted to see if there was anything you wanted to say about the arrangement you did there or that.
Well,
or
anything like that. Yeah, I mean, on the recording of it, I wrote the song on a classical guitar, like a nylon string.
Oh, okay.
So it had a deeper kind of woody kind of, you know, kind of, and it was also, I probably played it a lot faster than I did on the recording. It's a lot sort of slower and more deliberate, because I'm also a really horrible finger picker, like just downright bad, and always have been for what can't just my fingers don't do well. So that recording was pretty deliberate, though it was initially meant to be like a demo. And this is what happened with the whole album, is that I made demos of, like, you know, these 14 songs, you know, but the demos were pretty, like, elaborate. I mean, there were, like, multiple overdubs and just really good. And I started to realize, it's like, you know, my fear is, like, if I redo these, I'm going to lose. And this is a thing, too, with, like, other songwriters, is, like, that, you know, if you re-record everything, you lose that spark that was in the demo.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really afraid of that, because especially with this music, it was meant to be kind of a certain amount of raw, especially this song. So I just decided, all right, so basically the stuff that's recorded and in semi-states of finished or not are actually the demos that I just need to finish. But, like, so for this one, again, there wasn't much I had to change about it. It was the nylon string guitar. There's also kind of another character in that recording, which I think is the character of the coma, which is a recorder. Me playing a recorder, and all I'm doing is I'm kind of just reiterating certain melody lines over the whole thing, but bathed in, you know, echo and delay to make it sound about as creepy as you can, and out of tune, truthfully. Mm. Like, especially on the bridge sections, because it goes into a minor key, and I don't know if you've ever played a recorder, you know, most of them, you know, they're pretty much pitched to a specific thing, and you can fart around with your fingerings and kind of get slurs and kind of...
Mm-hmm.
But I purposely wanted it to sound out of tune and almost like hell. Just like, what would hell sound like to anybody who has to, like, the idea of, like, you know, when you're
an out of tune,
like,
recorder,
like a child who has an out of tune recorder,
yep,
and can't play it. That's the sound of hell. And that was in my head, right? And then the other part of it is this little really old splash cymbal thing that I had, just to get some sort of that's kind of the idea, again, a wash and reverb to kind of get a watery kind of, you know, something going on. So it's pretty swimmy, you know, from what you, mm-hmm. like you said, you know, lots of reverb, lots of trying to get as much of a depth kind of going. And there's also piano on that as well. It was a digital piano, but it was a good one. It was a good, it was a Roland that I borrowed from Keith Munsell at the time. Okay. Actually, I happened to have it in my studio when I was doing it.
Right.
And so that worked out pretty well. And it was also, I'm not a keyboard player, and it's a simple song, so I could fake it pretty well.
So in terms of where people can hear your music, I know that this is not yet released.
It is not. I have to finish it.
Right.
I have, like I said, it's basically 14 songs, some of which are finished, some of which are actually, the tracking is done. I actually did release two of the songs on an EP in earlier mixes, and, you know, an EP which is released, and I do have copies of, but it's not, this song is not part of those two. And more than likely, those two will change since they was released a while ago. So I'm hoping to finish that, but like I said, this one's not available, but... maybe you will get a sneak peek of it, of the recorded recorded rough.
At the end, we'll put the recording you sent me, which may differ from the final release.
Indeed. But one is actually pretty cool. This one is actually probably the closest to being done mm-hmm. as far as tracking and as far as, like, the sound I'm looking for. This, you know, so that's, you know, it won't be too different, but it'll be probably a little better sounding, a little less rough, but other music that I do have, I have a new album called Taken Monorally that I just released, which is another old finished project that I needed to finish, and a number of other releases that if you find me up online on either Facebook or even MySpace, I still have a MySpace page, and we'll hope to have a new website with being able to buy some of my other older music online in digital form, and yeah.
And it seems like Facebook is generally a good place to
probably keep the best up place
with what you're up to.
Probably the best place, yeah.
So I guess that more or less wraps up this episode of Tell Me About Your Song. Thanks to Joe Auger for talking to me about his song Coma 2. Thanks to Sandy Woods, who provided an air-conditioned place for us to record this. You may have heard people moving some things around. There's an open mic that's going to start in like 10 minutes, but they let us set up in here. It's hot out. We would be crazy to record someplace else. And Sandy Woods has an open mic Tuesday nights, which you should come to. It's in Tiverton, Rhode Island. My name is Jacob Haller. My website is music.jwgh.org. You can find show notes on Tumblr. There's a Tell Me About Your Song Tumblr, which is tumblr.com/blog/yoursongpodcast, all one word. If you enjoy this episode or this series in general, you can go onto iTunes and find it and rate it. If you are not already subscribed to the podcast, you can also subscribe to it there. And I think that's about it. Thanks again for listening. And here's Joe's song, Coma 2. Thank you.
So slowly with your hands, so sensuous, create deep ripples beneath the sea. Touching so tentatively, feeling all incompletely, it's so comfortable to drown. To wake up.
I guess we've already talked about it some, but do you have any questions about this
process?
Or?
Not really. I think I'll let you. I'm gonna let you drive.
Oh, you well, just, I was going to let you drive. So
oh, you're going to let me drive.
We may just go off a cliff.
We may go off a cliff. Okay.